Hello, and welcome to It's All About Choices. This is the show where my guest and I discuss our lives and our careers framed through the choices we've made, the good and the bad. Now, for those of you who don't know me, my name is David Barrow. I've been working in IT service-related roles for coming up to 29 years. 2023 will mark my 30th year in the workplace, and those years have really flown by. And as I approach that 30-year milestone, I've decided that it's time to reflect on the choices that I've made that have led me up to today. And I do this not just for myself, but because I think it would be great to share these experiences in order to help others on their career journeys, other people that face similar choices to those that I've faced. But I want to explore those choices and those of my network of colleagues, customers, mentors, and friends who are willing to share their experiences via the choices they have made throughout their life, their careers in IT, or even their careers elsewhere. Each episode of It's All About Choices will begin with a year on my own journey, and my guest will be somebody I first met at that time. And my guest today is Marianne Herholt. Marianne and I first met and worked together in 1998 when I would make a choice that would change my life. We're going to pick up from episode one, where I had been working in Manchester with IBM Global Services. I was at home and living with my parents. And at that time, I was looking forward to a holiday where I'd just go away with friends and be carefree for the summer. At the time, Marianne was managing IBM's largest UK help desk of that time, and she was building a team in the bright lights of London. And I was faced with a simple choice, but a challenging choice. I could stay in Manchester, I could stay at home, I could go on holiday and take on another role with the help desk that I'd returned to after my break. Or I could pack my car, leave home and move to London. All in a week. Now, making that choice to work for Marianne would literally change my life. Months later, I met my now wife, and under Marianne's leadership, I would be given the feedback and the skills I needed to realize more opportunities within IBM. So Marianne and I will discuss the choices that led to us working together that day, the choices that have led Marianne and I to today, and the choices that we plan to make to shape our future. As we speak, you are welcome to ask questions via YouTube or LinkedIn, and we'll do our very best to cover them. The other great thing about this conversation is, until a few moments ago, Mary and I hadn't even spoken for about 20 odd years. So I'm really looking forward to discovering more about Marianne and the choices that she made that led to that day and the choices that have led to today. So Marianne, welcome to It's All About Choices. I really appreciate you agreeing to come on.
Thank you, David.
It's so good to have you. It must have been a bit of a bolt from the blue when this name from the past, an old help desk analyst, got in touch and said, please, could you come and chat to
me? It was a very nice surprise. So thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you for coming. So let's get to it then. So we met in 1998 and I had a big choice that I made, but yeah. I'd be really interested to learn about how you arrived at that day and the choices that you made that led to then.
Well, as you said, it was IBM that we were both working for in the UK. I live in South Africa now, which is another sort of big choice that we'll come to. But there was a big choice that actually led to me joining IBM. I actually, from leaving school, I went into retail, which was, you know, may surprise some people from the IT, but it's actually through that career that I got into IT, very much in its infancy. So, David, you were saying that you've worked in IT for a long time, but I think I've worked in IT for even longer. I've actually just had my 60th birthday, which I haven't admitted to a lot of people.
Oh, but congratulations.
Anyway, thank you. Let's just admit it. You know, I've been in IT for a long time. And I worked for the John Lewis Partnership. And it was through, I was actually working on the shop floor. And I saw an advert for a job called a network controller. I had no idea what a network controller was, but it sounded kind of interesting. And it was in their head office. And I thought, well, that's cool. You know, Let's stop doing this Saturday working and everything that you obviously do when you work in retail. And let's just apply for this job. So I applied for this job. And I think one of the big choice here was, it was really just to go for it. I know that's a little bit of a cliche, you know, we'll all read that on LinkedIn, but I honestly did not even know what the job was. And probably a lot of people didn't, because it was very much the infancy. It was all mainframe. There was no PCs or anything like that. And I went for this interview, and I was so blasé about the interview as I went in. I was just, well, whatever's, you know, it's a day away from the shop floor. And I got the job. And I found out afterwards that a lot of people applied for this job, and I got it. And I honestly think, and it's one of the things that stayed with me throughout my career, when I went into that interview, I was just totally myself. I didn't try to give the answers that I thought they wanted to hear or any of that sort of stuff. I just went in there and just spoke about myself, you know, as you do in an interview, and I got the job. So that was how I actually got into IT. And the job was managing the network as it was. I mean, it was a very basic network in those days of the John Lewis Partnerships point of sale systems and also Waitrose. But I mean, they were very basic systems in those days. But that was actually how I got into IT. Then another key decision came up. I got the opportunity to travel. That was through my partner at the time, was made redundant. And we decided to go and do a world trip. So we actually left work for about 13 months. We traveled all around the world. It was absolutely fantastic experience, as you can imagine. By that time, I was about 30. So I was quite late for a gap year, really. It was my, you know, my deferred gap year, if you like. And when I came back, another key choice came up, because obviously I was out of work. You know, I gave up. I just handed my notice in, and then I was out of work and I needed to work. And John Lewis Partnership did actually offer me my job back. And by that time, I was senior network controller, and I was managing the help desk as it was. It was a very basic version of what we call a help desk now, but it was a help desk. And I made the decision not to take my old job back. And again, I think that was quite a key choice, because I just felt, you know what, I want to go forwards, not backwards. And I'm not knocking anybody who would have made a different decision, because it depends on all sorts of factors and where you are in your life at the time. But I just thought, you know what, I could just go back into, it was a very comfortable existence, let's be honest. The John Lewis Partnership at that time, you were quite cushioned against the real world, quite honestly, which I realised when I left. So I thought, am I going to go back into this comfort zone, or am I going to actually come out of my comfort zone? And I came out of my comfort zone and I applied for other jobs and I got a job with IBM.
Wow. And so was that over here in the UK that you started with IBM?
Yes, this is all in the UK. UK. I've been in South Africa for 9 years.
I see.
So this is way, way before. So this was all in the UK. Yeah.
I understand. And so how did, because I mean, at the time, I remember that deal that we worked on, and I say we, when, you know, you were the help desk manager and I was a help desk analyst, so I'm not going to put any bones around it. I looked up to you. I was like, oh wow, yeah, that's where I want to get to, that's where I want to be. But you know, when we were working on that, if I recall correctly, that was the biggest help desk IBM had at the time. So it was no great shakes. It was, you know, you were trusted with a jewel there. How did your choices that led you there happen in IBM? Was that the progressive? Is it something again you took some risks on, or
it's an interesting question. I joined IBM actually as a contractor, and at the time their help desks were all based in Manchester in their offices in Sale, which I don't think they've got anymore. And my job was not actually managing a help desk, but implementing. So it was more like project management. So we were setting up the help desk. So again, this was quite early days of these types of help desks. And one of the help desks that I set up was the very first 24-hour one, which was for Asda supermarkets. Ah. So even then, this was a big thing. Oh, my gosh, we're running 24 hours, you know. I think sometimes maybe people who are a little bit younger than me might be surprised as think that this has been going on forever, but it actually hasn't. So that was the role that I was doing. And then the help desk that we worked on came up, and they usually the help desk would be moved into our centre in Manchester because that was where all our infrastructure was. But that particular client didn't want to do that. They wanted to stay where they were, which was in Brentford, as you know, right near to the Brentford Stadium. And so then they were really looking for somebody to run that help desk. I'd moved up to the north to take that job. And so I was offered to sort of move back down. You see, a lot of the people, and I suppose this was something where the choice was kind of almost made for me, because a lot of the people up in Manchester didn't want to move to London. But for me, it was my home. I'm from London. So it was actually an easy choice for me, just to move back. And yeah.
It's crazy because I worked in sales too. That's obviously where I started my life with IBM.
Yeah.
And the way I recall it, and memory's an odd thing, isn't it? Sometimes it's not quite what happened, but the way I recall it is I was working on a help desk, and it was kind of a couple of customers that were folding. So the customers themselves were not folding, but the help desk was no longer going to be kept there. And I kind of had a choice to do the same role in another Manchester help desk, although nothing was guaranteed. I'd have to go and apply for it. But I've actually got no recollection apart from I was going to go on holiday, and I think it was the week after, and then this opportunity came up. But I've actually got zero recollection as to whether I applied for it, whether I put my hand up and was... I honestly don't know. All I do know is that I had to pack the car and leave really quickly, because, as you say, it was starting from scratch on site in Brentford. Although I just thought London. I think on the first day when I was driving in, and I thought a flipping plane was going to land on the car because I'd never been down there before. I was used to country roads. And I remember literally driving down, taking a day off from my role, finding somewhere to stay, which was in High Wycombe, a bedsit in High Wycombe. Thinking, right, that's 20 miles away from London, so it will take me 20 minutes to get to work. Little did I know. And then coming in on that first day, and it was, I say I've got no comprehension as to how I arrived on that day. And I don't know whether even you have any recall. Was it just because people in Manchester put their hand up, or
I think it was. I'll be honest with you, I don't remember the details either, but I know we had to build the team quickly. We did take a team from the client who transferred in, but we expanded. From what I remember, there was about 25 people on the desk, but we built up to about 60 like very, very quickly. It would have made sense for us to go to that team in Manchester, because that was the IBM help desk team, so that they were the people with the skills and who might want to take the chance, as you did, you know. But I'll be honest, I don't remember exactly what that process was.
I'm pretty sure I think it was probably in my case a combination of my desk was folding, and I put my hand up, I think, because there's other people that I recall working with who remained in Manchester, who we'll talk to on later episodes. It's really crazy to start sort of thinking about it again and trying to remember how it all came together. But I think one of the things I recall at the time, and it was actually a choice probably not made by yourself, but made by your management team. And it would go on to really influence me, and I'm interested to get your take on it, is I remember when you were putting the desk together, we were broken out into teams, and you were looking for team leaders for each team. And I came down, and I applied for one of the team leader roles, and I didn't get it. I didn't get the role. A lovely lady named Tracy got the role. But what I do remember, and it was the first time this had really happened to me, is out of, you know, what I would consider a negative outcome, is the team that you had in place took the time to explain to me why I wasn't ready for that role and what I needed to do to develop into that role. And I really recall that, and I've really applied that kind of level of thinking when I've been in the positions later in my career. And I'm just wondering, from your perspective, do you recall ever having a conscious choice that that's how you would treat people or have people treated, or was I just one of the lucky ones at the time?
It's quite a deep question, that one.
Sorry.
no, it's good. I don't know. To me, that just seems like sort of common courtesy or humanity, really. You know, that's how you should treat people. You know, it's quite a lot. You invest quite a lot when you apply for a job, I think. Although I'm kind of totally dissing what I said before about when I went into that interview and I was very blasé. But that was it was a bit of a different situation. Mm-hmm. I'm aware when people apply for jobs, and you know, me more recently, I'll talk about myself a little bit more recently. I mean, I moved to South Africa 9 years ago. Basically, I married a South African, and we were living in the UK, but he always wanted to come back here to home, what's his home, and various things came together that won't bore everybody with. But, you know, we decided to come back, and then I was in a situation of having to find work in a very, very different environment. And I wasn't the youngest, you know, so it's been actually quite tough. Although, you know, I have sort of managed, and I did a lot of contract work and things, and I sort of pretty much had to rebuild myself from scratch, if you like.
Yeah,
it was quite difficult, actually. And I can really relate. I mean, before then, I worked for IBM for 15 years. So obviously, I've never been in that interview situation or anything for quite a long time. Going back into that, it's quite difficult, you know, and actually very, very time consuming to do a really good CV and all the stuff that you have to do around it. I mean, finding a job is a full-time occupation, actually. And I think the least you can do is have the courtesy to come back to somebody and explain to them why, you know, you didn't feel that they were right for the role. And I know, you know, we're all busy and all that sort of thing, but what's the most important thing in your team? Now, if you look at that help desk team, the number one most important thing was the people in that team. They are the people that's answering the phone to the client. They are the front line to the client. How much more important do you want to get?
Yeah,
you know. So why would you not treat them with courtesy and want them to get the best that they can out of say, even if it was like a negative, sorry, I don't feel you're ready, but how long does it take to give somebody that feedback? It's a 15 minute job.
Absolutely. And I think before we move on, I just want to show this this comment we've had from Claire, which is she, you know, she loves how accidental choices and volunteering can change your life. And it's so
absolutely
true.
Yeah, it's so true.
It's you know, it's not all by design, is it? But I remember.
No, it really isn't. And you know, something I think is something that I would really like to sort of get over is there's so many different routes that you can take, and there's not always a right and a wrong, you know. And I think sometimes we think, oh, I made the wrong decision, but how do you know actually that you made the wrong decision, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that was the thing. I think had that moment have been handled any differently, whether it was by yourself or by the team, in terms of me not getting that role, I was already in a very precarious place because I was testing myself away from home, away from kind of the parents, from the nest, in a whole new environment. and putting myself forward, not just for the role, but then for the team leader role. I've never been a fragile soul, but I definitely recognize as I've grown older that I could take things personally at times and not harness it correctly. But I remember just that time being given to me was so useful because it gave me something to aim for. And I don't know if you remember this, and I talked about this in another different type of conversation the other day, but as a service help desk, sorry, we were obviously targeted on certain KPIs and so on. But I don't know if you recall, I remember us having a certain flexibility, and coming back to what you were saying before about how we treat the customer. And my recollection of my time in Manchester, which may be skewed, was that we didn't have such a flexibility as to how we treated customers. It was fairly transactional. But I remember working on your desk, if there was an opportunity to solve something and to add value, we were given the empowerment to do so. And I really recall that as being the first time I was empowered to make something of a situation. And again, I'm probably testing your memory, but do you recall that being a conscious choice of the leadership of the desk? Or again, was I pushing boundaries from my perspective?
No, I think it probably was quite a conscious choice. Yeah, to be honest, I think that is my style. I know a lot of the help desks are very, very scripted, but you know, aren't we all just sick of contacting a contact center, or a contact center contacts you and it's so obvious they're reading a script? You know, you're immediately turned off. And I just don't think it's the best way of dealing with the customer. I mean, you've got to have limits around it, obviously.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you're there to help the customer, and that's what you should be doing. So I think that was a conscious choice. Yeah. I would say as well, a company like IBM, they did actually allow that as well, which not all companies do. That's one thing I'm going to have a little bit of praise for IBM. Generally speaking, very good experience working for them. And I found that they did facilitate that, you know, and supported us as managers. And I think anybody within IBM, I think you were supported to do that.
I agree, because I'll talk about it in another episode, but as my career progressed through IBM, I really began to feel that through going to the business school at Warbrook and places like that, where if you showed the desire and the appetite, then you were really well rewarded in terms of the opportunities you were given. And I honestly don't think a combination of me putting my hand up in Manchester, if that's what it was, and your management style and that desk, without those two things, I'm not sure that would have happened for me, if I'm perfectly honest. I'd like to just explore, and it's merely because I remember it being like a really pivotal moment, for no other reason than it was a pivotal moment in the world. But before we move on from that help desk, is we worked the millennium, 1999 to 2000. Yeah. And I still remember to this day that being one of the most fun nights, I guess.
It was at
work that I'd had. And I think that was that we had a really good team that you built down there in Brentford. I know people say that, but I think we genuinely did have a really good team.
We
all worked well together. We still got pictures of nights out. But again, in terms of choices, it's for me, from that period sort of 99, 2000 into millennium, that is, if I recall correctly, when our paths started to diverge. I don't know if that's correct. You moved on from the desk. Is that right? And that's where I don't actually know the choices that you made from that point forward.
I set up, but I didn't actually really set up the desk. There was a team sort of setting up the desk, and then I came in as the manager. And as I was saying before, I moved from more of a project management role into then more of a people management role. And that, apart from it was sort of a chance to move back to London. Let's be honest, that was a big part of it. I really did want to get move more into people management. So I was very lucky to get that opportunity. Another thing I would just mention as well is about mentoring. I had an absolutely fantastic mentor. Her name was Sue, and I feel so bad because I can't remember her surname, but she was one of the project managers at Manchester as well, who you may remember as well. She was sort of assigned to me as a mentor, because it was my first role as a manager in IBM. And she helped me just with the practicalities of, you know, what form do you have to fill out for this, that, and the other, but also just a support. And I remember one time she came down from Manchester to Brentford to work with me and show me some things. And I was quite overwhelmed at the time. So I think I'm quite good at hiding, you know, I was probably looking like the swan, but in fact, you know, my legs were going crazy underneath a lot of the time, which hopefully I hid from the team.
You absolutely did.
It was quite overwhelming, you know. And I remember Sue coming down, and we went across to the other building where there was a canteen, and I just absolutely burst into tears. This is something I remember very, very strongly. I was sitting in that canteen, and I just said to her, I can't do it. Can't cope. You know, and she convinced me that I could cope. And she just supported me. You know, there wasn't anything particular, but you know, when you've just got that person that you feel you've just got somebody to turn to. So that was something that was really important as well, I think. And this having a mentor, probably preaching to the converted here, but that was really, really important for me as well. But to actually answer your question and get back to the point, after about 18 months, I think it was about 18 months, 2 years on the desk, and it was intense. It was fun, as you say, we had a good time, but it was intense. And IBM, although it's a fantastic company to work for, but they give you a lot, but they expect a lot as well. It works both ways. So I just actually did feel quite burnt out. Again, which I might have hidden quite successfully, and I really did feel like I needed a change. And I also did. I felt that I'd done what I could do. I felt it needed somebody different to come in with a different viewpoint. I just didn't feel that I had the energy for it. So I'd got interested in a team that had come and worked with us called Business Transformation, who looked at the organization, you know, organizational change, communications, all that side of things. And they actually worked with us and helped us with some of the setup that we needed to do because our organization grew so quickly. And I was really interested in the work that they were doing. So I actually approached their boss and said, is there any room for me? And there was. So that was what I moved into.
I see.
Yeah.
I'm going to just come back to the point on the mentor piece. I think it's really, really brave of you to say what you said there about, you know, how you were feeling. Because I think at the time, you know, and kind of one of the points behind me wanting to have people like yourself as guests on this particular podcast or webcast, whatever we choose to call it, is to illustrate that, you know, at that time, I didn't have a clue. I was in my own bubble of my own cool answering stress and moving home stress, and I, you know, I did see the swan serenely sailing down the corridors of the help desk. But I think it's really important that one of the reasons I say I wanted to set this up is I mentor people now, and they do believe that, depending on where you are in your career trajectory, you've just got there and you've got it all under control. And I think it's important that people understand that we don't always have it under control.
No,
and it's good to be able to have somebody you can speak to and share that with.
Yeah,
and I think it's really, really great and brave of you to help get that message across, because that's really one of the points behind what I want to do with this, is explain to people that, you know, we're, you need people to help one another. And
absolutely. You know, you do not do it on your own. You really don't. You might be like the figurehead sort of thing, but there's a lot of people behind you, actually. And Sue was really critical to me, just as a person that I could just sound off to, you know, when I needed to, as well as actual practical help, actually, you know, of how would you handle this type of thing.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. So I mean, so you went off into the new team, and then what choices have kind of led you up to today? What's happened? We've gone half an hour about what led us to that day, and now I'm going to expect you to compress what's gone on between then and now.
I've had a very long career.
10 minutes.
I'd say that the sort of next key choice was really leaving IBM, which I did in 2012. And as I say, this was more of a personal decision, because of my husband wanted to come back to South Africa. It's not quite as simple as that, actually. It sounds like I'm sort of blaming him, and it wasn't like that. You know, we we made a decision as a family to do that. So that was quite a hard choice as well. You know, I've worked for them for 15 years. It was pretty comfortable, to be honest. And they are a really excellent company in a lot of ways. So to sort of then give that up and not really know, you know, move. I mean, you moved from Manchester to London. Well, I moved from London to Cape Town. Wow. And that's a pretty major move, you know. That was a much more of a personal choice. And I think that's another thing. It's not always about this is to do with my career. I mean, because then I had my son by then, so he was 8. So your focus does change. Your priorities do change as well. I mean, I've always enjoyed working. I like working. I like the corporate world. I didn't want to completely come out of working. But I had my son to think about as well, and it does obviously change changes your whole life, basically. So that was much more of a personal choice to actually come here.
And it makes, I think, again, it's a really good point. You know, I think in my case, I probably honed in on career far too much during IBM. And after IBM, certainly in the role after IBM, and actually, it's kind of relevant. You mentioned you took your career break at 30. I actually took one at 33, where I was at Capgemini, and we went away for a year, and it was the best thing I ever did.
Yeah,
it enabled me to reset and rethink and understand.
Yeah.
This is not gonna work as well as I want it to, and it really influenced the choices that I've made later about both life and career. So I think it's really important.
I think it's actually quite a good age to do it. You know, I made the joke saying it was like the deferred gap year, but actually, you know, for one thing, you've got more money. You know, I mean, you've got no money when you're younger. You know, you've got more money. Sorry, that's South Africa's full of flies, and there's one wants to get in on the gap year. So, I mean, there's that side of it, just the practical side of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm just reading Doug's comment there. Yeah, no, it does. It really does. And it's exciting, you know. I mean, I loved traveling. And as I said, I did like a world trip at that time. And it was brilliant. A lot of people said to me, oh, you're so brave. And I thought, I'm having a year-long holiday. What's brave about it, actually? Yeah. You know. But mind you, it was like pre-internet and mobile phone, and we really were actually quite cut off, to be honest. So you know, sort of now, if people travel and it's all on Instagram or whatever, we were really cut off. You know, I phoned my parents once a month, and you had to go and find somewhere that had a phone in a shop or something, and
yeah.
and we So we're getting off the subject here, but
no, but I think it's really interesting, because you know that shows that, you know, the difference in your choice versus mine was not pre-internet, but it was still a lot less a lot less contact than today. But for me, the choice was to get away from IT, to just get away from being connected to everything everywhere. And it's only 12 years later. It's so much so different now. We benefited greatly from just resetting and getting away from the phone. I'd spent, in my case, 13 years on call, always working, always tied to the phone, never really relaxing. And it's a good lifestyle.
I felt that, you know, going back to you were saying about the choice with the help desk as well. So I think you must have been there when we actually went to 24 hour, because we didn't start as 24 hour.
That's right.
But we moved to 24 hour, and then as the manager, okay, you're not necessarily going to work 7 days every hour, but I felt a lot of pressure to be there sort of all the time. And
I remember that,
because you can't do it.
Yeah, and then I remember handling major incidents and you being on the email, for example. You know, you'd be getting those emails off me at 3 a.m. if that was the shift that I was doing. It's an always on thing, isn't it? It's crazy. Well, what I'd like to just do, because we're coming up to like the last sort of 10 minutes ish, is talk about today and I know that you're looking at some choices now, maybe not your own choices, but choices of others, and kind of discuss, you know, what's influencing those at the moment and the future.
Yeah, well, my son is 17, so he is coming up to very important time in his life, really. The school system is all different here. He's just started. Our school year is the same as the calendar year, and he's just started a year called matric. So they do matric or matriculation at the end of this year. And then he leaves school, which is like, well, how the hell did that happen? I've suddenly got almost an adult on my hands. So obviously that is it's a major sort of decision point for him. So it has made me sort of really, really think about some of my decisions as well. And so him being 17, I look back to when I was 17. And I made a major life choice when I was 17, was I was in the middle of A-levels. Obviously in the UK, we do A-levels. So I started my A-levels and I did 1 year and I left school. It's something I've thought about a lot in my life, because then I didn't go the route of university and so on. And really the reason that I left, if I'm perfectly honest, I was very influenced by some other people, probably to my detriment. So I left school at 17 and I went out to work in the retail business, which eventually led me into IT. That decision has had a lasting impact. Not necessarily a bad one, because I'm not unhappy with the way my life has gone at all. You know, I've had a really good career. You know, I've got a fantastic family, so I'm extremely grateful for what I have. But it's actually taken me quite a long time to get there. And even now, when I came over to South Africa and I was saying I had to find work, okay, what are you qualified in? Nothing, actually.
I see.
And even, you know, with years and years and years of experience, you actually can't always get in over the first hurdle, because you don't look good on paper. My CV actually does look quite good on paper, but you know, it's very automated now as well, job hunting.
Yes,
so if you don't have those sort of magic keywords in your CV. And I don't, and I'm not one to lie on my CV. My CV is embarrassingly honest. You can't even get through the front door. So this is one of the things that I'm talking to my son about. But I feel quite a big dilemma in myself about this, because I feel that he does actually want to study and go to university, but at the same time, it isn't for everybody. And I don't want him to feel like I've got to do this. So I actually feel quite conflicted about it. You know, I do feel it would be good for, I think he should do it because he's capable of doing it. And as I say, it just kind of opens doors in a way that I found doors closed for me. But at the same time, I would not want to say to anybody, well, you've got to have a degree, because you haven't. there are multiple routes, you know, and I took one of them and it's been a very convoluted one.
Yeah, it's a bit like snakes and ladders, isn't it? I'm going to say I'm probably the wrong person to talk to about this, because I was similar. I was out the door of the school at 16 and never looked back. That it just wasn't for me. But then I found later in my career where I was moving out, I guess, out of entry level positions, so to speak, and moving, especially having IBM on my CV was always great. But there came a point where my lack of education and qualification did start holding me back, and I've had to take control of my career through certification, through relevant career certification, which has been right for me, because I was ready to learn and I was ready to listen, probably more importantly.
You knew what you were interested in and what you wanted to focus on. I mean, do we know when we're 17? You know, I didn't have a clue. Apart from the fact that I was very into music and I was in a band and I wanted to do. But I was realistic enough to know that it was, you know, I wasn't going to become the, you know, a pop star sort of thing. I had a lot of fun though.
But that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, it's a tough call. I think Doug's kind of agreeing with us here.
South Africa is quite similar to the US in a lot of ways, and this is definitely one of the ways. You know, if you speak to an agency, an employment agency, you know, have you got a degree? No. They just switch off. You know, it's like, I worked for IBM for 15 years and I did this and I studied, and I'm a professional scrum master now as well, by the way. I did study and do that because I went into project management. I've got myself a few things, and I've got, I did a lot of contract work and I've built a lot of experience. You just find that, but you haven't got the piece of paper. Okay.
It's very short-sighted, in my opinion. I'm sure there's others that would disagree, but
I can see both sides of it. I think because of the route that I took, I can see both sides of it. I feel for my son, for the choice for my son, just smooth that path, you know. But at the same time, don't get hung up on it. Like you said, David, you left when you were 16. You know, you've had a great career. Look, you're doing this now. It's really cool. So there's multiple different routes that you can go.
Absolutely, and I think you've probably hit the nail as to what the particular web is about being called It's All About Choices. Although it's IT is all about choices, or it's all about choices, depending on how you read it. because it, you know. For your son now at 17, there's a series of choices to make, which will probably for him feel like they're going to influence the rest of his life. And you, as his mother, are thinking the same. But it doesn't necessarily have to. But it's so hard for all of us when we're in the middle of making a choice to realize that it's not the be all and end all, because at that point in time it is the be all and end all.
And I think especially at that age, it's you can't look forward. It's impossible. You know, as human beings, we can't do it, really. It's impossible. We can't imagine what he's going to be like when he's 30, 40, 50.
No,
you know, we couldn't. That feels like, I remember thinking 30, you know, you might as well be dead. You know, you just can't think forward. So I think that's another thing I'll try to say to him, is your life goes through a lot of phases. It's not going to be like this all the time, you know. You're going to move into a different phase. I'm going to move into a different phase now when he leaves home. You know, I'm going to be an empty nester. And that's going to be a big, that's a big change for me.
I bet. So if we were to close, I would normally ask what advice you'd give yourself on the day that we met, but I think we've covered that. So I guess just to close, what's next? What's your next landmark choice that you're thinking needs to be made?
The next landmark choice for me will be because my son is half British, half South African, and he will now make a big choice whether he studies here in South Africa or whether he studies in the UK. What happens there is going to influence our choice of where we go. And so that is going to be a massive choice. Not to say we will follow him around. I mean, he'll be a grown adult, you know. Don't think he wants mummy following him around. But joking aside, you know, that's the next big decision point, really. You know, with him obviously leaving school, and yeah, that's going to be the next decision point. And the decision is not yet made.
And that is that's the key to life, isn't it?
Yeah,
lots of choices.
Yeah, we're trying to actually keep very open mind on it, and that's another thing, and it can be difficult to do, but is try to keep our options open. All right, we're going to do this. You know, we don't know. He could fail his matric hopelessly. You know, who knows what's going to happen this year? We don't
exactly.
know. Well, or you get another COVID thing starts going on or something, you know.
So true, so true. Well, I mean, it sounds to me like your son couldn't be in a better place to have, you know, have the support that he needs to make those choices. If I go back many years now, you certainly helped me with my choices and given me that empowerment. And I'm sure he's getting so much more as his mother. So I think he's in the right place. And I think
you, David. I really appreciate that. And I'm pleased to have made a difference to you. I'm really genuinely very, very pleased to hear that.
Well, you absolutely did. Yeah, and and I think we'll close that. I just want to finish by thanking you for coming on, responding to me after so many years, a cold message.
I've followed you on LinkedIn for quite a while, so it wasn't.
Oh,
it's okay.
You.
I didn't think you were a stalker or anything.
Who is that weirdo? No, but no. Thank you very much. Thank you to those that have made points whilst we've been talking. It's really well received, and yeah, just thank you for coming on, Marion. And everybody who's watching, have a great weekend. And the next episode is coming up, I hope, in March with literally Marion's successor in both Help Desks and It's All About Choices. Nick Evans will be joining me to discuss his work on the Help Desk, and we'll continue the Help Desk story from there.
Fantastic. So thank you so much, David. Thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And thank you, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.